Welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton, where we equip pastors to take their churches from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Join us weekly for encouragement and practical advice in your pastoring journey.
Welcome back to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton.
And Dan Hurst.
I'm Dan Hurst. There's Mark Clifton sitting right there.
Right here.
Kyle Bierman over there, who is working all of the controls.
Hello, Kyle.
And if it doesn't sound good, then
it's his
we
fault.
Know who to blame.
He's like the sound guy at church.
He is.
You can turn and look at him and say, what's wrong?
Never pay attention to him until something goes
That's
wrong.
Right.
That's right. Yeah. I've learned, by the way, when in preaching sometimes, that the best thing you can do is look at the sound guy and go, what's going on?
That's right.
You
know?
You should blame him, yeah.
If the sermon's really dying, you can just act like the mic doesn't work.
It's not me.
Not me.
All right, we are going to talk today about probably one of the most important things that is, well, it's fundamental to any ministry, any pastor, well, any person in a leadership position in a church has to discover this. And it starts with the fact that people don't trust you.
I know.
You know, when you're new at a church, they may not like you. I mean, they voted for you, but that doesn't mean they trust you.
No, and you know, we joke a lot on this podcast, probably more than we should, and have a lot of fun topics. But guys, this is one that you have to have. Your degree of success as a pastor is based primarily on your commitment to Christ and your personal discipleship and prayer life, and on the degree to which people have confidence in you and can trust you. Mm-hmm. Much more so than your preaching ability or your leadership, I don't know, quotient or whatever. If you walk with Jesus and people have confidence in you and can trust you, you can pastor that church. But earning and keeping trust is work. Yep. It doesn't happen naturally, and you can lose it really quickly. So our good friend Chuck Lawless has given us 7 ways to earn and keep trust, and we'll put them in the show notes, and they are all really good. Number one is?
You can display confidence, but never cockiness.
Oh, and those two are so different.
Oh, they are.
And I've been around pastors who have no self-awareness, and they think they're showing confidence, and they're just showing ego and cockiness.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's so off-putting, and it's so phony-looking and shallow, and you can see through it. And often, a cockiness and that kind of attitude just exhibits not confidence, but just the opposite.
Yeah.
I'm an insecure person. I got to tell you how good I am. I got to tell you how much I know. I got to tell you all that I've done. I got to tell you all my expertise, because at the end of the day, I'm not confident in anything. And I just think, how can a believer in Christ who walks daily with him come off as sort of cocky and egotistical? It just screams. And look, I battle it, all right? I have a huge insecurity complex, or whatever you want to call it. I've had it my whole life, and been in counseling for it. And every now and then, my dear bride, she'll kind of point out that you don't need to say that about yourself. You don't need to. It's okay. You know, there's sometimes this sense, even in my own life, where I feel like, now, not as much now that I'm older. I have really cut back on this. But I mean, there was a time when I was younger, I just felt like I had to prove myself to people. I had to let them know how good I could be and all that I have done. And it comes down to, like, even planting churches. I mean, you know, how many churches did you plant? Well, depends on what you mean plant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I might have personally been the lead plant in 4 or 5 or 7, I don't know. But I might have had some role in strategizing and helping another 6 or 7. And so sometimes you'd say, you know, I planted 12 churches. Mm-hmm. Really? Did you? I mean, that kind of thing, that cockiness, people can see through that.
Mm-hmm.
And man, you got to have your wife or somebody speak into you, because you don't even know you're doing it.
Yeah.
Now, what's confidence look like as opposed to cockiness?
Well, first of all, confidence is within you. Trust is within the people that you're trying to minister to.
Okay.
So there's a big difference there.
Right.
So you could be confident and think you're trustworthy, but it doesn't matter if they don't trust you.
That's right.
And so the confidence is the discovery of how people see you. And so you can only be confident in what people really think about you.
And he says here, people will trust a competent leader, but an arrogant leader will always be dismissed.
Exactly. And so if you, and trust isn't something that you, it's like saying, I'm going to trust Jesus from now on.
Yeah.
No, you're not.
Right.
You know, you've got to learn to trust.
That's right.
You know, and the only way that you can learn to trust him is by taking baby steps and letting him prove himself in your life. So speaking back to what you just said, you do have to prove yourself to them, but all under the leadership of Jesus,
right.
Of course.
And here's the deal. When I say things like, when I try to make myself look good in front of people, basically, I'm needing their affirmation.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, Pastor, you don't need anybody's affirmation. You received all the affirmation you ever need at the cross.
Yes.
Your affirmation is in the finished work of Jesus. Your confidence comes not in how many churches you planted or how much the church grew. Look, I know I'm getting into trouble here, but sometimes even an initial conversation with a pastor, they sort of have to let me know that they went to a church that had 100 and when they left it had 400. It's like, maybe I need to know that, but maybe I don't. You know, what's that? How am I supposed to react to that?
Yeah.
You don't need my affirmation that you can grow a church. Your only affirmation you need is that Jesus sought you, saved you, and called you.
Yeah.
There's no greater affirmation than that. So your confidence comes not in how big is my church or how much I've accomplished, how many churches I planted. It's in who I am in Christ.
Well, you know, I'm speaking from personal experience here. My first full-time ministry was in youth work, Sycamore Hills.
Yes.
And right down the street from where your dad was pastoring.
That's right.
And we, our youth ministry, we had a gym and we were able to, in those days, you could go to the school and have lunch with your kids. And the youth ministry grew to the point where we had, sometimes on a Friday night, we'd have over 400 kids show up,
yep.
You know, for something. It was just, right. It was a huge ministry. God leads me away, takes me to First Baptist Church of Tequesta.
Florida.
Yeah. And Lou Miller was the pastor down there.
Right.
And he said, I want you to come down and pastor this church. He said, it's the worst church in the Southern Baptist Convention. He said, I don't like them. They don't like me. I don't like this place. And I said, I'm not coming down
come
there.
Come be a part of this, Dan. Yeah. We want you
that's
to
exactly
come.
What he, I said, I'm not doing this. Look, he said, I already told him that you come down in view of a call.
Yeah.
You know, he said, think of it as a vacation. Oh, no. I went down there. Sure enough, I hated it.
Yeah.
I hated it. But sure enough, 3 months later, God just made it very clear. That's where we were supposed to be. So we go to this church. I leave a youth group of 400. I go to a youth group of 23. And in 3 months, I built it to 11.
To 11, okay.
And that was a wet rag there, right, brother? And so, but I learned it. And it was that very thing that Lou taught me. He said, look, it's not about you. It's about Christ. And if you make it about you, it will never be about Christ.
Yeah, that's true. And you've got to have confidence in who you are in Christ, not confidence in what you've accomplished for him. Okay, ways to earn and keep trust. Display confidence, not cockiness. Number two, follow through, which means you cannot overcommit. When a leader does what they say they will do, people gain trust. When the leader always bails on responsibility, when they have a new idea every day, when no reality ever becomes real, people begin to doubt everything the leader says. And, you know, I'm sitting across from Kyle Bierman. He's on my team at NAM. That's about half of who I am. I wake up in a new world every day. I got a new idea every day. I want to go to every speaking engagement that I'm invited to. I tell everybody, yes, I'll come. And then I look at my calendar and go, I can't do that. In fact, in 2 weeks, I have two major events scheduled at the same hour and the same day. And I'm going to have to try to be at both at the same time. Fortunately, they're in the same city. But I'm going to go to one, do as quick as I can, head out the door, let somebody else finish it, and get to the other one because I have double booked myself. So why did I double book myself? Because I don't want to tell anybody no. And why do I not want to tell anybody no? It goes back to what we said before. I want people to like me and think well of me. And that's so shallow.
I don't want to put you on the spot too much, but can this sometimes go back to the first thing we talked about with the cockiness? I have to be everywhere. They need me there.
Yes, it does. And again, it's not just cockiness. It's I want to be needed. It's okay. Good to be needed okay. Because I feel insecure. I mean, it all goes back to my security okay. in Christ, you know. And so I want to say yes to everything. So
both of those could be a downfall.
It could be.
I have to be the one because I'm the only one who can speak here.
That's right.
Or, man, I need to be there.
That's right.
So that I find myself.
So
valuable.
Overcommitting. Yeah. In other words, you cannot be a trusted leader if you say yes to everything because you can't do everything. Mm-hmm. All right, and then you'll end up not following through, and then that's devastating. People have so much more confidence in you if you will actually say no. They may be disappointed, but if they know you'll do what you'll say you'll do.
Yeah.
And guys, that's a lifelong learning process for me, and I'm nowhere near there yet.
And they'll be disappointed, but much less disappointed than if you say yes and then don't show up.
Oh yeah. That's a kiss of death right there. Yeah. I mean, really.
I had a friend. I had my first director of associational missions when I first got my job as a church replanter or church starter strategist, whatever I was down in Atlanta, in the northern suburbs of Atlanta, up in the mountains, really. And my director of missions was a guy named Leonard King, and he had this real heavy North Georgia accent. He was a country boy, and he made a commitment to speak at a WMU rally in his association, and he double booked himself and he couldn't make it. And so I guess the WMU lady in their association just, you know, rode him over the coals publicly at a meeting and just nailed him for not following through and not showing up when he said he would. And he owned it, but he told his wife, I was in the room, he goes, honey, he said, I'm going to be at that WMU meeting next year. He said, if I die between now and then, you go to the cemetery, you dig me up, and you roll my body across that stage. I'm going to be there one way or another. I've never forgotten that. Okay.
All right, number three. Number one, display confidence, but never cockiness. Number two, a follow through, which means you never overcommit. And then number three, to earn and keep trust, you've got to learn to trust others.
What's that mean?
Well, without even having completely read through this.
Well, I noticed. Thank you for the great pre-show work.
I will tell you this, that I can't trust others.
Unless, I can't trust you for show
others
prep.
Can't trust me unless I've learned to trust.
There you go.
You know, and so I have to learn to trust other people also because that's what they're going through in learning to trust me. So I think it just means that there has to be this, as Chuck puts it, a mutually exclusive commodity.
Yeah.
That's an interesting term.
It is. If you don't, again, it goes back to what Kyle said, I have to do everything because nobody else can really do it.
Yeah.
I mean, that mentality of a pastor, and again, Kyle and I work with declining and dying churches, and sometimes there's wonderful pastors in those churches, but they're pastors who do everything. I mean, literally, sometimes they give the announcements, they read the scripture, they pray, they preach, they do everything but lead singing, and sometimes they lead the singing. Mm-hmm. And then also, you know, if you're going to have a meeting, they're the ones that plan the meeting, get the room set up, bring in the whiteboard. It's like they do everything. And go, and they say, well, we don't have anybody to do anything. Well, you know, you've got to figure out some way to develop leaders and put trust in people. If you'll put trust in people, they'll learn to trust you back.
Sure.
But you're kind of communicating to your church, no one's really trustworthy because I have to do everything.
And by the way, if that happens, you don't love them.
That's right. You're not loving them as you should,
you
for
don't.
Sure.
You
go ahead, Kyle.
You know, one of the things that we talk a lot about is being a resourceful generalist, doing what needs to be done for a time, but then finding people that you can hand things off to, right? Who can take over. And anytime I hear from a pastor and they say, I've been here 5 years and there's no one else who will do anything.
Yeah.
I just have to gently say, that's on you. Because you've not trained someone up. You've not entrusted others with that. And so I think a lot of times pastors burden themselves much more than necessary because they are unwilling to train others. Maybe it goes back to that insecurity thing that we talked about, right?
It does.
If I'm indispensable, then they'll recognize how much they need.
Right? The title of this is Seven Ways to Earn and Keep Trust. And if you're insecure, you can't earn or keep trust.
Sure. Yeah. And along with what we're talking about here, you cannot, like I mentioned earlier, that you don't love them if you don't trust them. And they don't love you if they don't trust you.
That's right.
And so that's the whole premise of your ministry is to love one another. And so that means that you've got to learn to trust them, and they've got to learn to trust you.
And if you're not putting trust in others, it may mean that you are controlling, micromanaging, and even negative toward every idea that's not yours. You got to think through that, guys. All right, number four, you have to extend grace, but in some ways be firm on non-negotiable principles. This is a balancing act. In other words, if you want to earn trust and keep trust, you've got to extend grace. You can't, everything can't be a hill worth dying on. Mm-hmm. All right. There are some things you just got to extend grace to and let it go. It's just not a hill worth dying on. But then there are other things doctrinally, theologically, ethically, they're a hill worth dying on. Yeah. And guys, I don't know, but some of you have a hard time deciding which is which. Mm-hmm. I mean, for some of you, a hill worth dying on is we can't have that flag on the platform anymore. That's got to come down. For whatever reason, whatever your personality, you got to have that on there. And it's like, you know, that's not a hill worth dying for. That's may get you fired, and it probably has some of you listening to me, you know. But if someone says, you know, something along the lines of, I'm not sure about the virgin birth or atonement, well, that's a hill worth dying on. Those are pretty obvious ones, but there's a lot in between. And in order to build confidence and people have trust in you, you've got to extend some grace. There's got to be, everything can't be your way or the highway. And you got to realize that we talk about tactical patience, and tactical patience means just because I don't change it doesn't mean I agree with it, and it's not ever going to change. It's just not going to change right now.
Right.
I had a guy tell me one time, he said he was mentoring a pastor, a young pastor, and this young pastor was in his first church, and he called his mentor, and he said, I'm leaving. I am quitting. I'm getting out of here. This is nuts. He said, I got an email from the deacon, chairman of deacons, and he told me the deacons had met without me, and they really want me to go ahead and wear a tie on Sunday morning in the pulpit. They didn't like that I wasn't wearing a tie. And he said, that's it. If that means that much to them, we are so far apart, I'm leaving. And my friend said, okay, I'm going to tell you how to solve this. He said, I'm going to go get something, and I want you to write this down. So he said, are you ready? He said, yeah. He said, all right, write this down. He, okay, wear the dang tie. Yeah. I mean, just wear the tie. You got it. There's got to be some grace you extend, all right? Yeah. Everything's not a hill worth dying on. Yeah. And, man, again, working with dying churches, I've seen pastors blow this up so many times. And then something that is a hill worth dying on, some church bully who runs every business meeting, who won't let anything get accomplished, you let him give away whatever he wants. Mm-hmm. That's a hill worth dying on. So that's a whole nother podcast for a whole nother day. But you got to extend grace in some ways, but also be firm in non-negotiable principles. Number five, Mr. Hurst.
Number five, Mr. Bierman.
Yeah, tell us what number five is, Mr. Bierman.
So number five is don't be a know-it-all.
Well, that kind of takes me off.
I don't like that one.
The whole purpose of this podcast. The whole purpose of this podcast is show you how much I know. Now, what's he mean by that? What's Lawless mean by that?
He says, try to be knowledgeable and aware by constantly learning, but realize you don't know everything, and you'll know far more with a team.
Yeah. Yeah.
People trust a teachable leader.
I will never forget this. And I know, you know, Rick Warren, people are pretty, he's kind of polarizing. He didn't used to be as polarizing as he is now, but he's certainly polarizing now. But about 1986, I think. So he'd been doing his church about 5 years, and it was still, it was several thousand. I forgot, probably 4,000 or 5,000 even then. And I was working for the Old Home Mission Board, and I was directing church planting projects west of the Mississippi. And we were having a church planter retreat in Southern California, and didn't know that Rick would come, but we invited him. You know, he's 5 years into Saddleback. It's running 4,000 or so. So he said, sure, I'll be there. And so we said, we'd like you to speak like at 1 o'clock or something like that. We started at 9 that morning. I will never forget. 9 o'clock, before 9 that morning, he's there. So he's talking to all the church planters. 9 o'clock that morning, he's on the front row. This is before you had laptops, really. He had a yellow pad, legal pad, and a pen. And every church planter that presented, most of them hadn't broke 100 yet. He was taking notes. Mm-hmm. He's a learner, wow. Right? He's a learner. I've never forgotten that. And he wasn't doing that for show. He was really writing stuff down. Hmm. And, you know, I'm always doing consulting. I'm going to give some stuff away here. When I sit down and the first 20 minutes of my consult with some pastor is he tells me everything he knows, okay. But what I like is when I sit down with a pastor and he tells me what he doesn't know yeah. and what I need to know.
Yeah.
A lifelong learner rather than a lifelong teller.
This is a danger for pastors who have advanced education going into a church.
Hmm.
And believing that they are the experts, and if the folks in your church would just listen to what you know, everything would go well. Okay, so here's and again, this goes back to number one: confidence, not cockiness. There are folks in your church who may not have the educational degrees that you do, but they have far more wisdom than you do.
Yeah.
And there are times, quite frankly, you just need to shut up and listen and stop talking.
Well, you're far more trustworthy when you're vulnerable.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, that's because if you're vulnerable, then I can relate to you
yep.
because I'm vulnerable, you know? Yep. And I think that's important in your teaching, too.
In your preaching. Listen, especially if you're a new pastor, man, if you've been there a long time, same thing. Take some of your older members out to coffee, out to lunch, and just listen to them. Mm-hmm. Ask them questions. Hear stories about the life of the church. Hear their heart for their community, their grandkids, and just listen and learn from them.
Let's move this along because we're running out of time on this podcast.
And it's dragging right now, too.
So let's go to number six, which is exhibit humility, but have courage to do the hard thing.
A trusted leader is able to do the hard things and share recognition with other people, but diligent to do the things everyone expects of the leader. So, I mean, he's able to not do everything that needs to be done, but he will do those things he has to do.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to be humble enough to share your leadership where you can share it, but wise enough to know what things you can't share.
What are the hard things? When he talks about this, exhibit humility, but have courage to do the hard thing. What are examples of the hard things?
I think sometimes there's some interpersonal problems within your church, interpersonal problems in the deacons, interpersonal problems, and I think you just can't step aside. You've got to put yourself in the midst of that and say, this is my job. I don't want to do it. I'd like to avoid the conflict, but it's not going to get better by avoiding it. I got to bring these two people who are arguing together. I got to help mediate this. We can't let this fester. We've got to hit this head on. I think many times pastors, we are conflict avoiding, and so we you know, if you like conflict, that's a whole other problem. That's another podcast. You got a real problem. But some pastors do. They get drawn to it. But I know in talking with Rainer, the times I've been with him, you know, he said he's never wished he'd dealt with conflict later on. It was always better to do it sooner rather than later. Mm. And I know in my own life, sometimes as a pastor, I'll sense tension between a couple of leaders, and I'll just ignore it. I think, oh, it'll get better. And I need to run toward that and go, hey, something going on here. We need to talk about this. So I think those are the hard things you have to do and not leave them up to somebody else.
I'm curious because, Kyle, you're younger than Mark.
Anybody's younger than me.
When you hear Mark talk about things like that, because he's speaking from experience here.
Yeah.
Do you think back to a time in your life, you know, and in your ministry where you completely blew that part and you're learning it?
Oh, goodness. I mean, I look back at some, like, letting conflict fester, and I didn't step in because part of it was I didn't want to get involved in a situation I wasn't really involved in, but when it involves church leaders and it's affecting church ministries, pastor, you're involved in it. Like that. So again, like I can think back to a couple of situations where I'm going, you know, if I had had that conversation a month earlier, we could have probably spared some heartache and some hurt feelings and some tension that just didn't need to be there.
Yeah. Or you see someone that's that's being some, it's being obnoxious in church,
yeah.
being obnoxious in their conversations, someone that is really being a bully and sort of taking over and dominating yeah. the business meeting. You just can't leave that to somebody else. I mean, you've got to deal with those yeah. things head
and,
on.
And this is where if you play your hand right, where everything is not a hill to die on,
right.
but you have some non-negotiables, that's where those can really make a big impact.
That's right.
If you reserve kind of, you know, going in and making those hard decisions when it's really necessary, there'll be more weight behind it rather than, you know, you deciding you've got to step in and control every decision that's made.
So, which brings us right to the seven
number
points.
Seven,
is exactly
yeah.
what you're talking about, Kyle, and that is that you value people
Absolutely.
More than progress.
Yep.
Yeah. So let's go back real quick, if you don't mind. We're talking about seven ways to earn and keep trust. So number one, display confidence and not cockiness. Number two, follow through, which means don't overcommit. Number three, earn and keep trust by putting trust in others. Number four also is extend grace in some areas, but be firm in non-negotiables. Number five, don't be a know-it-all. Number six, exhibit humility, but have courage to do the hard things. And number seven, value people more than progress.
Well, I'll tell you what, when you make progress the key way to define your ministry, you already have failed.
I know. Because yep. now you're using people as a means to your end. Mm-hmm. There was a old home mission board president. Man, you listen to me, it's like listening to, I mean, all these old stories.
It's like a time
I am
capsule.
The old man
I love it,
telling
man.
Stories, right? If you know who Quartz Redford is, put a thing in the show notes. That goes way, way, way back to the 1960s, probably. Quartz Redford was the Bob Record and the Larry Lewis and the Kevin Ezell of his day. He was the president of the Home Mission Board in the 1960s, I think. And Quartz Redford, he had a thing on his desk, a sign on his desk that said, don't count people, people count.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that we live in a world where we count people
mm-hmm.
in terms of their number. How many people do we have? Don't just count people, but remember, people count. People matter. And I've never forgotten that. And for someone who is the head of an agency where numbers is everything, you know, what's your baptism numbers? What's your Sunday school numbers? How many churches have you planted? And those things are important to be trackable, I suppose. But don't ever, people are not a means to your end. They're not like the downlight in your Amway line or whatever. You're not a multi-level marketing. You're going to as many people as you can. People know when they've been used like that. And it's not about growing numerically. It's about loving people and caring for them. And you got to value people more than progress.
Well, this has been an interesting discussion on a topic that is so critical to every ministry. And we hope that you've learned something from it. Please take time to subscribe. Leave us a note. We'd love to hear from you. And we'd like to know what you think about some of these things, because a lot of times we'll circle around on some of these topics, and it helps when we have additional input, especially from people that know what they're talking about.
Yeah, unlike us.
Yeah. So that brings a wrap to this. Thank you to the North American Mission Board for sponsoring Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant. This podcast is brought to you by the North American Mission Board, where we help dying or struggling churches regain health for the glory of God and the good of their communities. If you found this conversation helpful, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. To learn more about becoming a replanting pastor or to explore resources about revitalization for your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.